It's the World Soccer Talk podcast, the only podcast that focuses on watching soccer on TV, online, and apps. In episode 89, we feature an exclusive interview with Stu Holden about the UEFA Champions League coverage on TNT, how Manchester United and Bayern Munich won't have their Champions League matches on US television, talks about the UEFA Champions League, the final being played in the US of A, our thoughts on the first week of UEFA Nations League matches, and we have a bunch of letters from you listeners in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, aka The Gaffer, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Kartik Krishnaya. All right, Kartik, so what we've been watching this past week. So a lot of soccer, definitely. It was international break, but we had everything from UEFA Nations League, we had friendlies, and USA, Mexico friendly, of course, was one of them, USA, Brazil, lots of matches. First of all, in terms of the UEFA Nations League, I know you watched a few of the games, as did I. What were your impressions in terms of the level of play?
That's the question. I mean, I think the Spain-England game was very intense and had the feel of a competitive match. It was at Wembley. The France-Netherlands game at times felt competitive, at times felt like a friendly or maybe a World Cup qualifier, an early stage World Cup or Euro qualifier. Italy-Poland had a very kind of, there was an intensity around the match, I think, just because Italy has been on such a bad run of results, such bad run of form. They were looking for a result. I have Spain-Croatia on my DVR, which I still want to watch because of the two sides involved. Also, John Champion and Craig Burley calling the match. They have a great chemistry, and obviously we interviewed both those guys very recently for this show. So I'm still looking forward to seeing that. But I think what I would say is the intensity level has been higher than a friendly. Limiting the substitutions because they are competitive matches has impacted that. Is it at the urgency level late in matches that a World Cup qualifier would be at or a match in a major tournament? No. With the exception of the England-Spain game where England was desperate for an equalizer, and obviously there's controversy about Danny Welbeck's disallowed equalizer, the goal that was chalked off by Welbeck. It seems like it's higher intensity than a friendly. There's more at stake than a friendly, but it's not, it's almost like, here's the best analogy I have as an American. It's almost like the Gold Cup in those off years where the national teams are also trying to qualify for the World Cup. There's a Gold Cup tournament, like last year's Gold Cup tournament, 2017, 2013, 2009, that take place right in the middle of World Cup qualifying. And it had the intensity of those Gold Cup tournaments. They're still competitive matches. You still want to watch them, but there isn't the sort of commitment level and intensity that you have in a World Cup qualifier, in a Euro qualifier, or certainly in a major tournament.
Yeah, and we have to remember, too, this is just the first week of the UEFA Nations League. So as with other tournaments, other qualification tournaments, it usually takes a while the later you get in the stages of competitions, qualifying competitions, the more nervy and the more intense it gets. But overall, I was impressed. I mean, for me personally, as a soccer fan, I probably was more interested in the matches than I usually would be. I didn't hear as many complaints about the international break as I usually do on social media. I watched a bunch of games. I mean, the Wales-Ireland game, for me personally, was the standout highlight on ESPN Plus. And, Wales won this match 4-1. I mean, a really impressive performance by Wales, and Ireland were just caught flat-footed. And Ryan Giggs, as a manager, did a fantastic job in terms of really pushing a really high-paced passing, one-touch passing, lots of movement, a really attacking style of football from Wales, which is not what we've been accustomed to in the past. One standout player for sure out of all of them was Ethan Ampadu, who's I think he's on loan or he's one of the Chelsea boys, but here he started the match and was man of the match in my opinion. Just a fantastic midfielder there. I think he's only 17, so showing a lot of promise there. Italy-Poland, you mentioned that was a very nervy game. Italy overall this past week, Kartik, I think for me personally has been a really interesting watch in terms of where they are, the level that they're at. Post-World Cup, not having qualified. And now we see, is this Italy as bad as we thought they were? They are. I mean, they're really in transition. But even playing the game, I mean, just very slow, very methodical, really kind of a playing style that seems lost in international football, or lost in international football that's actually productive.
Yeah, they were absolutely dire against Poland for the first 60 or 65 minutes of that match. And even after they got the equalizer from a somewhat generous penalty that was called, they just didn't ever look like they were going to win the match. It felt like the Sweden match, and then their match against Portugal, similar. I mean, they had the same sort of the same sort of look of a team that's able to maintain possession in between the thirds. But in the final third, there's no end product, there's no ingenuity, there's no creativity. And it's quite revealing now, because I think we're in a long, long-term dip for Italy, which was which has been masked by Conte putting together that 3-5-2 and getting them deep into the Euros in 2016. I think this dip really began realistically. I know some people point to Euro 2008 and World Cup 2010. I still think they were solid at that point. They didn't play well in that 2010 World Cup, but I would say it started right after the Euros in 2012. So we're talking about a longer-term dip than even the Dutch are in. Now, speaking of the Dutch, let's address them. I watched them against France on Saturday, I believe it was, on Univision Deportes. Good broadcast. Very, it seemed like a partisan French broadcast, because France is the world champions, and Univision wanted to take advantage of that, their first match back at home since winning the World Cup. But the Dutch, they had some flashes in the second half. Ryan Babel got his first international goal in 13 years. But they just, they're another side that looks like a sped force. With the exception of the early 80s, when you go back to the early 1970s, the Dutch have always had this conveyor belt of players coming in, and really like young, exciting players that you get fired up about, to the point where 10 years ago now, 12 years ago now, Marco van Basten decided, okay, I'm not going to take Jaap Stam or the De Boer brothers or Seedorf or Kluivert or Edgar Davids to a World Cup. I'm going to go with a lot of young guys because we have that kind of quality in our young ranks. And they got out of the group. And then they were very good in the Euros 2 years later. It's just not like that anymore. So the Netherlands and Italy continue to be stories. If you think it was just because of one manager or one bad qualifying cycle for both of them, that's that for the Dutch now too, because they missed the Euros also. That's not the case. I think both traditional powerhouses and two nations that have given so much to this sport are really down right now.
What's interesting for me, Kartik, is that you have essentially what were friendlies, which were these international games between, say, in Italy and Poland and Portugal and Italy and so on and so forth. Now that you've got them in a frame of UEFA Nations League, they have more meaning. So, for example, just for me personally, and this is not for everyone, but this is me personally, I was paying more attention to the UEFA Nations League this week than I was to some meaningless friendlies, which would be USA against Brazil and USA against Mexico. Now, a lot of listeners were probably going like, wow, USA against Mexico is a meaningful friendly, or it's even not a friendly, it's a grudge match, whatever it may be, however you look at it. But to me, still, at the end of the day, it's a friendly. And in both of these matches, I watched the first half, so the USA and Brazil game, and it was 2-0 to Brazil by the end of the first half, and it was game, set, and match, and I switched it off. To me, I had no interest in watching the second half. I had no faith that the US would bounce back and win it 3-2 or anything like that. It was just pretty one-sided. Same thing, actually different for the US-Mexico game, and I watched the first half of this one, but really just a completely unimaginative, really lack of creativity, a woeful performance from the US, and actually Mexico too didn't look that good either in the first half, and I was completely bored and switched it off, and caught the highlights of the goal later, I think the next morning. But it's interesting, just the whole, you mean meaningful versus not meaningful, and how the UEFA Nations League, to me at least, to me now, carries a lot more importance than just regular old friendlies.
Yeah, I'll admit I probably wouldn't have watched any of these matches. Maybe England, Spain. That's it. If it hadn't been, if they had been friendlies, because we're used to friendlies, and even England, Spain, maybe I went to watch because we're used to friendlies between big European powers in these dates anyway. Particularly coming after a Euro or after a World Cup before qualifying begins. Although actually qualifying would have begun this time. It would have been one of those windows where you have one qualifier and one friendly, and it would have been, the friendlies would have been rather meaningless to watch. So yeah, I completely agree with that. I paid attention to these matches because of this. The USA situation on Friday, they played Brazil, as you mentioned. I can't watch Fox, especially for US games. So I watched Univision. Univision was propaganda, right? It was Mexican, just Mexico from 7 to 7:40 Eastern time. They had Mexico, Uruguay later in the night. Then from 7:40 to 8, it was all USA, no discussion of Brazil. USA, Brazil has played. Brazil beats them. US had some moments in that friendly. The US looked better against Brazil than they did against Mexico. Against Mexico, they looked, the first 30 minutes of the US Mexico game was embarrassing. The worst the US has looked, even including World Cup qualifying, worst the US has looked in years in a down period for the US. That's how bad they were. Forced substitution. Weston McKennie gets injured. Sarakin's forced to put Julian Green on, which, hey, when there are injuries, sometimes you make the wrong substitution. He made the right substitution, changed the game. The U.S. were much better from that point forward, but there was still something very lacking in that. But back to the broadcasting aspect. So Univision, we know, is very big into pushing Mexican narratives. But my understanding is that they're and I watched the pregame show, and then I didn't watch a lot of the bridge coverage between the two matches or halftime of the Mexico-Uruguay game, but my understanding is that there was very little conversation about Uruguay, who throttled them 4-1. It was about Mexico, how bad Mexico's kids look, et cetera, how good is this guy going to be, et cetera, et cetera. Simultaneously, I was watching the Portland-Seattle NWSL game, Chris, which was a fantastic match with a great atmosphere. Bigger, better atmosphere than anything at the international level this weekend, I felt. So that
it's,
was...
It's just a shame that was at the same time as the U.S.-Brazil game, though.
No, it was at the same time as the Mexico-Uruguay game.
Oh, the Mexico-Uruguay later that night. Yeah. Okay.
But that was very, very solid broadcast. Jen Hildreth and Ali Wagner, Dalen Culp, again, usual team with Lifetime. Lindsey Horan was just off the charts good, so was Tobin Heath for Portland as they won that match. But the USA coverage, let's talk about this for a minute, Chris, because I hope you saw the pregame on Tuesday on ESPN.
I missed it.
Okay, so I don't know what happens on Fox. I don't watch Fox, particularly when they show the US. But to me, just, and again, you know, if our listeners say Fox was great and they were hypercritical and they were making nuanced points, on Friday, let us know. Tweet at me at KKFLA737 or write to us. But ESPN was so good in their pregame show. I mean, Hercules Gomez was hitting theme after theme about the coaching situation, the inability to hire a coach. Are we really going forward if we hire an MLS guy? The Jonathan Gonzalez subject came up. Gomez said flat out, and I think Max Brados was really taken aback. Casey Keller was kind of defensive about it. Gomez said the word, basically used the word, they lied to him. They lied to the kid, the U.S. Soccer Federation. And that was a pretty big deal. And then you had Taylor Twellman very clearly calling out Major League Soccer and player development in the United States and in conversation with Ian Dark in the lead into the match and about how there just aren't enough quality U.S. men's national team eligible players in attacking positions in Major League Soccer, and that two of the top 21 goal scorers in the United States in Major League Soccer, only two of them are U.S. men's national team eligible. I'll point out one of them came up is Dom Dwyer, who is English, was born in England, moved here to go to college at the University of South Florida. He obviously can play for the U.S. Glad that he's been naturalized, but he's not someone you can say we developed, right? You know, we lucked into him more or less. That means one, which is Jaiassi Zardes, of the top 21 goal scorers in our top domestic league. Tolman wanted to make that point. Gomez wanted to make that point. It created a lot of conversation, a lot of buzz on Twitter and on social media. Again, Chris, and maybe I'm wrong because I'm not watching Fox, but I think we generally know what they talk about on Fox. And these are points that would not have been raised there. And actually, I know they weren't raised there because I'm on Twitter during the game and pregame, and I don't see the kind of conversation we do when ESPN has U.S. games. It is unbelievable to me that Fox and ESPN can have the same national team, the same product, their viewing, and their commentators view it completely differently. Mm-hmm. And from my perspective, and I think the perspective of most people that are grounded in some sort of reality, the ESPN perspective is much more realistic than the Fox perspective. So to me, it's mind-blowing.
For me, Kartik, it's the difference between Alexi Lalas and Taylor Twellman. And I don't agree with everything that Taylor says, and I certainly don't agree with everything that Alexi Lalas says. But Lalas seems to be all about the hot takes. And to me, it comes down to almost a level of trolling. So whether it's on social media, on Twitter, or on television, he seems to be I don't even think he believes some of the things he says, but it's almost like as if he's just saying things just to be a point of contention and maybe contrarian at times, but very much rah-rah USA.
And it's also, I think, the difference, honestly, between having Max Brado's host and Rob Stone.
Right.
There's definitely that to it.
There's definitely that also. I mean, the Twellman seems to be more thought out, kind of does more of his research and shares a point but goes into detail about it and is more believable, more authentic versus Lalas, who at this point in time, I mean, estimation of him in terms of the quality level of his analysis has gone way, way down in the last like 2 to 3 years.
Yeah. And here's another point.
And that's the big difference, I mean, for me, between Fox and ESPN.
Yeah. And here's the other big difference. Fox does not have anyone in their studio, in co-commentary, in their soccer coverage in general of the United States that has Hercules Gomez's experience of having to fight through not being in an elite youth program, having to fight through being in our second division, USL, to get to Major League Soccer, having to fight through being a low salary player in MLS and deciding to take an offer in Mexico in Liga MX, to have to fight through being on the fringes of the national team and come up into the core of the national team where he made a World Cup roster. So I think it's also perspectives. Gomez has a unique perspective about the system and how the system leaves people behind and how the system doesn't identify our best talent and how the administration is that a lot the guys who are and a lot of the co-commentators and studio guys at Fox are quite good from where they sit, but they just don't have that perspective. They can't offer that level of analysis that he's able to offer. And the same for Seb Salazar. They don't have a guy like Sebastian Salazar who understands, I think, every kind of nuance within you know, the little micro things within
struggles.
The bigger picture, right?
Exactly. And the sad part about all of this is that Hercules Gomez was, for a short time, working for Fox Sports as one of the analysts, I think, on a freelance basis. Fox had the opportunity to hire him. And I think Hercules never heard back from them. And ESPN, the opportunity with ESPN came up, and he's like, "Okay, yeah, I'll go with ESPN."
I just don't know how to react to that, because how do you have a guy of that level that you don't engage? He's been on your airwaves, and you don't at least try and make an attempt to bring on board. Again, this is why I think some of us have so many concerns about Fox, Chris. Do they have an agenda in who they hire and how they present the discussions around the U.S. men's national team and U.S. soccer in general?
That's a good question. I think they're just incompetent. I mean, at the end of the day, I think they don't know what good talent is, and they might hear someone saying certain things and go, "Yeah, that makes sense," and "Yeah, he sounds like one of us." To me, Hercules Gomez, he's Latino. He fits an ideal demographic. He's bilingual. Same with Seb Salazar, too. Here are people that, could actually bring in a whole new audience. Whether it's Anglos or whether it's Hispanics, whatever it may be. But here's an opportunity to bring in a new audience to authentic coverage. But yeah, I mean, so that's interesting, though, Kartik. I did miss the pre-match for ESPN and Fox. It would have been an interesting contrast. But we can predict exactly what's going to happen. We know that, you mean, we'll, hopefully some of the viewers can clue us in, but our listeners can clue us in.
And my understanding is, okay, sorry to cut you off, Chris, but my understanding is, just want to get this in about the post-game. I didn't watch Fox, but I was told that Fox kind of highlighted the good moments for the U.S. against Brazil and, you know, what promise there is. The post game on ESPN was Taylor Twellman basically saying, okay, the U.S. got a result, they won, but I don't have any confidence taking this team, this particular set of players, into a Gold Cup without a Michael Bradley, without a Jozy Altidore, without a Christian Pulisic, and expecting to win or even be competitive in that Gold Cup. So that's, again, the difference between Taylor Twellman and the guys on Fox. They win on ESPN. Twellman is still being very critical and saying, hey, we won, but this wasn't good enough. This needs to change. The midfield needs to be better. There needs to be more creativity. There needs to be a little bit more ingenuity. I should give Ian Dark credit, too, because he's also, during the broadcast, not cheerleading, but making some very good points and leading Taylor Twellman into some of these discussions and postgame. On Fox, my understanding is it was, oh, you know, here, look at how good some of these young players are. It's a work in progress. Everybody was under 23. This team's going to be great in the future. So, again, I mean, it's almost like they're watching two different, completely different sets of players when they're not, these two networks and the commentators at the two networks.
ESPN has the pulse of the American soccer community. So they know what the soccer fans are, the frustrations that they're seeing and having. They understand that really kind of intimately, versus Fox, that lives in a bubble, that doesn't really understand what's going on and is just looking at the business numbers, the metrics, and is kind of listening to Major League Soccer and making sure that, you mean, that MLS is portrayed as being very strong and US soccer is kind of a very positive image, and is completely oblivious to everything else that's going on. That's my take on it. I mean, and again, that's the great thing about competition, though, Kartik, in this industry, is that we have ESPN broadcasting some games and we have Fox broadcasting others. It might be the same in England in the past, where you have BBC doing some England games and ITV doing games. Maybe the differences were similar, or maybe they were completely separate. I'm not sure, but it is interesting for sure. All right, Kartik, let's move on. Before we move on to TV streaming news, I do want to mention our sponsor, which is SeatGeek. Football is back, and SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every game all season long. Whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out, or need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. Now, SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever by searching multiple ticket sites and grading every ticket based on value. SeatGeek helps you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Best of all, my listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code WSTPOD today. That's promo code WSTPOD, one word, for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Now, Kartik, let's move on to TV streaming news and some interesting developments this week.
Yeah, so obviously World Soccer Talk has been all over the UEFA Champions League, the start of the group stage from TNT and Univision. I think it came as quite a shock, Chris, this week when, or actually late last week when we saw which matches TNT was showing Tuesday and Wednesday and which matches Univision Deportes was showing. There's some separate games on Galavision, but Univision Deportes was showing, and they're the same matches because, unfortunately, in the group stage, sometimes we forget this, there's usually one or two standout matches a day and the rest are like, eh. Although you kind of enjoyed through the years seeing those on Fox Sports regional networks or ESPN Deportes or wherever. But this is something that we've talked about or speculated about now for well over a year. Would Univision show matches that were behind a paywall on Turner? At least in the first week of the group stage, they're showing the same matches over the air that Turner is, which means you better go out and get Bleacher Report if you want to see some of those other matches. Now, I should mention again, there are a few matches on Galavision, which not a lot of people get. that channel. But if you don't have the Galavision, you're going to have to get Bleacher Report Live.
Yeah, or you can get Univision Deportes, the app, which you can get through Fubo, or you can authenticate through Fubo or through, I think, DirecTV and some of the cable companies too. So this is a huge predicament, Kartik. It's a dilemma, really, what it is. It's because this coming week with the Champions League first round, you have teams such as Manchester United, Bayern Munich, and others, they're not on television,
right?
Which is huge. I mean, I guess there's so many different storylines here. One storyline, Kartik, would be that the rise internationally of so many of these teams. So in the past, perhaps maybe say 10 years ago, you look at England and you say, okay, Manchester United, number one by far. The other teams are smaller, but you've had in the past 10 years, you've had the rise of a Manchester City, who are now on Galavision in the game against Lyon. So then the Manchester United game between Young Boys and Manchester United is on streaming. That's it. So if you want to watch that one. Then you got Bayern Munich against Benfica. That game's on streaming. That's not on television. And again, Bayern Munich 10 years ago, I mean, in the United States, I mean, they're still big, but 10 years ago, tons and tons of German fans and Bayern Munich fans. But then you've had other teams rise up, kind of, rise in prominence, such as Atleti, as one example. Or PSG, yeah. PSG would be a perfect example.
And that's why I think it stands out that the PSG-Liverpool match is on both Univision and TNT. Logically, today, in this day and age, that's the match you put on if you're TNT. But 5 years ago, it wouldn't have been. 10 years ago, it wouldn't have been. It would have been like, that's Liverpool playing just a French team.
Right.
And as you mentioned, Man City, Lyon's at the same time. That's the Galavision game. So that's essentially the number two game. You wouldn't think about that. You would go with the United match against Young Boys or some other match.
Yeah, another example too is Inter Milan against Spurs. I mean, 10 years ago, Spurs were a decent side. Now they're one of the top teams in England, and that game is on Galavision. So, and then at the same time, again, there's other teams that are not. I think Dortmund. Yeah, Dortmund is not on television either. So, it's challenging. So, if you have Bleacher Report Live, you're all set because you get access to every single game. If you have Fubo has access to Galavision, Unimas, Univision Deportes, and TNT. So you would get all of the games that are televised, as well as access to the Univision Deportes app that you could log in into with using your Fubo login. Other than that, it's tricky. At the end of the day, Kartik, to me, the biggest losers in this, other than Manchester United fans for this one week, are the pubs and bars in this country, the ones that will be showing all the games and working with the supporters groups, because some of them might not even have Galavision, some of them might not have some of these channels, and in the past you would have been used to it's always FS1 or FS2 or Fox Deportes, so that's another thing there too. It's what I would suggest to listeners is definitely do your homework. I mean, go to worldsoccertalk.com. We've got the schedule. We've got some advice and information and links and et cetera, how to make sure you can get to watch your games, because this is a huge change. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people complaining and saying, like, hey, this was so much better before when we had Fox. I mean, at least with Fox, we knew that the games would be on either FS1 or FS2 or Fox Soccer Plus or on Fox Soccer Match Pass. This is going to be tricky, Kartik. I think there's going to be a lot of people complaining next week once they find out and didn't do their homework and find out exactly what's going on with the TV schedules. All right, Kartik, so this is big news. Also, and whether or not this will happen, we'll have to wait and see. But speaking of the Champions League, there have been talks about hosting the UEFA Champions League final, a future one, in New York City. Now, this is according to an executive at MediaPro, which is a broadcaster in Spain. And they said that discussions are taking place about moving the final outside of the continent for the first time. He says talks are ongoing, investigating the feasibility of hosting a future Champions League final in New York City. he said on a radio show. This Kartik, I could see happening, especially if this La Liga match in January happens between Barcelona and Girona in Miami. That opens the door for a whole bunch of things, and I could see a UEFA Champions League final being in New York City in the future. What do you think?
Yeah, I think you're seeing football authorities really kind of put their foot down about the Girona-Barcelona match that's coming to Miami in January. Not because of that match specifically, although there was a lot of excitement about that match also because of the Catalan angle and the reported planting canned out Spanish flags at the match. In the middle of a time when these are two Catalonian teams, obviously Barcelona and Girona. But in order to prevent something like this from happening long term, right? They don't want the precedent being set. So it's going to be interesting to see how the fight over La Liga in the United States continues to play out, how UEFA, who are not in favor of it at this point, FIFA, who are not in favor of it at this point, and CONCACAF, who are not in favor of it at this point, how they might pivot if this possibility is actually on the table, which is a much bigger deal than hosting a La Liga regular season match, although it's still a pretty big deal in the United States. So let's see. I think this there are a lot of moving targets here. Opposition can soften. I'm not saying it will, but opposition can soften as things are incentivized for the governing bodies. So for listeners out there, don't just assume because you see Infantino make comments when he goes to visit President Trump at the White House that, hey, I'm against it. I want everybody in the U.S. to be watching MLS. Don't assume that there isn't something going on behind the scenes where FIFA just wants some sort of concession from La Liga or from those clubs or from whomever, relevant sports, in order to approve it and then open the door for this. Things are not always as they appear publicly. So we'll keep an eye on it. Watch this space.
The big question, Kartik, I have, which I don't think we can answer at this time, is that if these talks are happening, are they happening with some or are they happening with relevant sports or are they happening with somebody else? You mean in terms of moving the Champions League final, a future one, to New York City? Because that has big ramifications too. And obviously the Barcelona-Girona league match, if it does happen, that's been going through Relevant Sports, which is International Champions Cup, the company that actually runs that. So that'll be an interesting development too, to see if it does happen with the Champions League, which path they go down. Now, Kartik, let's move on to the next news item.
Yeah, and we talked about this, 15 months ago when Univision started streaming these Liga MX matches on Facebook. They are now facing legal action for showing these matches on Facebook. A complaint filed by Dish Network says that, and I quote, these matches are a major viewing attraction for Hispanic American television audiences. One might compare it to the National Football League of English language audiences in the terms of the interest it generates. And so they have filed the lawsuit, and this will be interesting to see how this plays out. We talked about this, if you remember, Chris, the week they started these broadcasts, that this could be a possibility. It took 15 months or 18 months. I can't keep track, but it was a while ago. It wasn't last season. It was the season before that we first raised this issue. And now it is going to be litigated.
Yeah, and Dish owns Sling TV, and that's right. Really kind of the thorny issue is that, for Univision to go have these games, Liga MX games, on Facebook, that circumvents Sling TV and other streaming providers that are providing, streams of the legal, the actual Univision Liga MX broadcast of the game. So you can go to Facebook for free and watch the game. So why would you sign up with Sling TV? And I guess it comes down to the contract that Univision has with Dish Network, which includes Sling TV, and what it says in there in terms of what they can and cannot do. So, yeah, that is moving ahead with the lawsuit, and it'll be interesting to see what happens because that could have, again, big ramifications, not just on Liga MX and Univision and Dish and Sling TV, but all streaming when you think about it in terms of Facebook kind of undercutting the whole operation there. All right, Kartik, let's move on to TV ratings and some big numbers out this past week. Of course, we had anytime you have a US-Mexico game, it's usually big numbers. And Tuesday night's broadcast was on ESPN. That one had 827,000 viewers for the 8:30 to 10:30 broadcast on ESPN. The last time that these two teams played each other in a friendly was April 2015. And in that game, USA against Mexico, that game averaged 806,000 viewers on FS1. So the number has increased for this one through ESPN, so that's good news. I do have the Spanish language numbers. Okay, and those numbers, Univision delivered 2.3 million viewers for Tuesday night's broadcast, and making it the second most watched Mexican national team match of the year on the Univision networks there. So you got, what, 2.3 plus 800,000. So all in all, over 3 million viewers for USA-Mexico, Kartik. That's pretty decent.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, too, because like, actually a lot of people on Twitter were saying, like, about the ESPN number, saying, okay, this goes to show that things are progressing and U.S. soccer fans are now kind of getting more back into the U.S. Team and the morale is increasing and things are getting better. My thing is that you don't know how many of those fans were actually Mexican fans watching it on ESPN, who were either English-speaking or bilinguals. So just taking that one number and saying, okay, well, that's attributed to U.S. soccer fans, that isn't the case anymore, I don't think. Then the USA-Brazil game on Friday on FS1 had 512,000 viewers, and then on Univision Deportes had 364,000 viewers. What that number does not include is if that game was also on Unimas or on Univision, the over-the-air network. So we'll get those numbers soon. Last but not least, Italy against Poland on ESPN2 on Friday. That one had 132,000 viewers for that match, which was during office hours from 2:45 to 4:45. So still a pretty decent number there for a UEFA Nations League match.
Yeah, and higher numbers than the Bundesliga has been getting in that time slot or the championship. Well, the championship's on ESPN Plus now, but higher numbers than you get typically for the club matches, if maybe Liga own match on VN when they have Friday matches in that time slot. So that number is not terrible, actually, the 132.
Yeah, and you have to think, too, that in terms of Italy, it's probably, talking about morale again, Italy, Italian fans' morale is probably at the lowest level for, I mean, all time. So yeah. A lot of people are probably not tuning in into that match. But yeah, still a decent number. All right, listen to the mailbag. We've got a bunch of letters this week. First up is Jeffrey Allen. He says, I do like Ian Joy doing Bundesliga commentaries for Fox. Last weekend, however, I watched Frankfurt against Bremen on FS2. Fox made use of the World Feed commentary for this, and it was most enjoyable. Fox should consider this more often. Good podcast, guys. Next up is Ted S., and he says, my ISP is Comcast, and my TV provider is DirecTV. Don't care much for either of them, but I'm a Serie A fan, and I can't sympathize with beIN Sports. Perhaps if they would have given us more variety when there were some big Serie A games, rather than jamming Barca and Real Madrid games down our throat, things would have been different. Now that they're beIN squeezed out by two monopolies, ironic when you consider they were doing the same thing with the monopolizing of their La Liga coverage over everything else they had rights to. So, I mean, my take on this, Kartik, is that at the end of the day, there's by far, I mean, probably times or like what, like 10 or more, by far the viewing figures for any Barcelona-Real Madrid match are going to trump any match in Serie A. Yeah. So there's a far more interest in La Liga matches. So in Ted Ness's case here, if they went ahead and actually, I mean, broadcast more when they had the rights, Serie A matches on a Sunday afternoon instead of a Barca-Real Madrid game, they would be able to, I mean, it would be holy hell. It would be just, I mean, so many complaints and people calling and protesting.
Correct, but I think there's also, we have to go back to when beIN acquired some of these rights when they first set up their channel in the United States, that there was some concern that they were acquiring too many soccer properties and monopolizing things and did not have the kind of distribution networks for excess capacity for additional matches to distribute them. be it online or through some second, third channel that that ESPN has and that that Fox has, that NBC has, et cetera. So I kind of see both sides of the argument. I have a lot of sympathy for BN and what's going on right now. But at the same time, I understand why there were fans of Serie A in particular who have been unhappy with BN for 6 years, the 6 years they had the rights of the league, seven seasons, actually, who say, you know what, they're not that sympathetic because BN made it difficult if they had a property and they had simultaneous events going on to actually watch that, the thing that they had bought. That having been said, they usually made the right programming decisions based on what ratings they were going to get.
It's difficult too, Carter, because like this person here, Ted, has Comcast and DirecTV. Actually, Comcast for his ISP and DirecTV for his television. So he should have had access to BN Sports, both BN Sports and BN Sports in Espanol. And then he would have had access to BN Sports Connect. And through BN Sports Connect, he would have been able to watch every single Serie A match. So there's no complaints about not catching a match. He would just have to take an extra step. But having said that, I think BN Sports' biggest mistake since they launched, six or seven years ago, is the BN Sports Connect product is absolutely garbage. In order to actually use BN Sports Connect, if you're using that streaming service directly, having to put in your DirecTV subscriber login details, it's a piece of garbage. It uses Silverlight. It's really kind of a really clunky, hardly ever works. And really kind of for BN Sports, I mean, a lot of listeners, me myself included, the best way to experience BN Sports Connect still is whether it's through Fubo or whether it's through Sling TV or through other means, but using other streaming platforms to access the streaming games from BN Sports through BN Sports Connect. So I can see both sides where fans could get upset. At the end of the day, there were options out there, and there are continuing to be options out there where you can watch almost every single game. So it's a two-way street in some ways. Shell Walker says, I just listened to the podcast and heard the listener question about South American leagues. I'm not sure if you know this, but Netflix is showing a mini-series about Boca Juniors starting this week, I believe. Love the show and keep it up, guys. I also miss Fox Soccer Channel 2. Awesome shows like the Hyundai A-League highlight show, Football Asia, and the J-League highlight show, and the best was Fox Football Phone-In. So, yeah, definitely some good memories of times back in the day on Fox. Anthony Bello says, hi, guys. I'm listening to your interview with Antonio Briseno. I think most fans may be looking at this with your hearts and not your heads. The most important property BN Sports has La Liga. In 2 years, the BN contract with La Liga is up. La Liga has hired a new media agency to negotiate the new contract. The new company has a current relationship with ESPN and had a relationship with Fox via the ICC. The president of La Liga has already started to talk to media companies about the new contract they're expecting to get at least double the current rights fee for. You have to figure that some of these conversations had to occur with both NBC and Turner Sports. NBC and Turner are owned by Comcast and AT&T. And again, you have to figure people in the programming departments are telling the people in the distribution department that La Liga is probably leaving BN. And Anthony goes on and on. It's a good point. I mean, it's one of those things that, and we talked about this in the interview with Antonio Briseno last week, where the relationship with Comcast, you have Comcast, who is a content provider, and they're also a TV provider and distributor. So they're got their hands in several different cookie jars, and they have a lot of influence. They have a huge amount of influence over the industry. The issue I have with BN Sports and kind of the deal with Comcast that fell apart is that Comcast was saying that they don't have faith that BN Sports will have La Liga in 2 years. Well, again, we don't have faith that Fox will have Bundesliga in 2 years. We don't have faith that NBC will have the Premier League in 2 years. We don't have faith that that ESPN will have MLS in 2 years. So those things can, the rights contracts can go and move and change once they end. So So beIN Sports is in a difficult position where they have to have mass distribution. They have to be on the sports tier packages that are on the same as NBCSN or Universo or others. Because without that, it's very unlikely that they'll be able to renew with La Liga. So in many ways, they're stuck in a corner where they're trying to fight to see if they can get that, because that's probably their only hope of having La Liga renew.
Yeah, but we have to remember, beIN is a channel that they've tried to diversify, right, with motorcycle racing, with some auto racing, with some tennis,
college football,
and Conference USA college football. But they're essentially a channel that's down to one blue chip property, right? So the other channels you mentioned, FS1, no one's going to drop FS1. No cable system is going to drop FS1 if they don't have the Bundesliga. Quite frankly, that 99% of the cable viewers in the country wouldn't care. They wouldn't notice. Same thing with the Premier League in a little different way with NBCSN. If they lost the Premier League, yeah, it would be a bigger deal because there are more people who are interested in the Premier League than the Bundesliga in this country, but they have other properties. Same thing with ESPN, with Major League Soccer, you mentioned. They are essentially a channel, like Fox Soccer Channel at the very end, which is down to one lucrative property. And once Fox Soccer Channel lost that one lucrative property, the channel was gone within 8 months and shut down. Mm-hmm. So that's, I think, the way we have to view beIN. We have to very much view it in the context of what happened to Fox Soccer Channel. Now, Fox was smart. Obviously, they've got more dynamism than Al Jazeera does in the U.S. market. They were able to transition Fox Soccer Channel to an entertainment channel, FXX, which is now in about 70 million homes. They were able to use that mechanism. But I think it's more similar to that, Chris. And again, I'm very sympathetic with beIN, but we just have to be realistic and honest about this situation. They're down to one property. It's a property that, yeah, we say among soccer fans, it's very popular, but in the bigger world of sports rights, in the bigger world of sports fans, it doesn't matter that much. And especially considering they get to see these teams on Barcelona and Real Madrid and Atleti on TNT and on Univision in the Champions League. I think they're up against it, really.
I don't like the way
Comcast and AT&T/DirecTV have handled this, but at the same time, I don't think beIN was going to be long for the world anyway with unless they were able to diversify their portfolio of sports rights. Now, maybe it's because of the monopolies they haven't been able to get their hands on more things, and right. If that's the case, I think that needs to be explored further, that angle.
As we go on. I mean, that's the thing with beIN Sports, is there's been a lot of obstacles placed in front of them that they have no control over. So Comcast broadcasting beIN Sports in SD, standard definition, instead of HD. That's for a lot of soccer fans, that's a deal killer.
Yeah.
Not having access, if you're a Comcast subscriber, not having access to beIN Sports Connect, that's a deal killer, because that prevents you from accessing the majority of the content that beIN Sports has. So all those, you know, when they used to have Serie A, all the Serie A games, all the Ligue 1 games, etc. So I feel for beIN Sports in terms of, yes, it's a difficult situation, but I'm not sure what else or what different they could have done. I mean, they had Copa America rights. They had rights to the US away games. They've had African Cup of Nations. They've had lots of friendlies. They've done everything that a lot of other broadcasters have done.
South American qualifiers, did you mention? I think.
No, yeah, yeah, CONMEBOL. Yeah. Those are huge games, massive games.
That's a big, big deal.
I mean, think back to November on that final night of World Cup qualifying. How many games were on beIN Sports that night? I mean, there were all the CONMEBOL qualifiers, all the final games of the CONCACAF qualifiers for the World Cup. It was incredible the amount of games that they had. So I think they've made mistakes along the way. The biggest mistake, I think, is beIN Sports Connect. That was really, if they had a much more stable streaming product that they could actually say, with Comcast now, okay, Comcast subscribers, you've lost beIN Sports, but you can subscribe directly to our streaming product that's, something like NBC Sports Gold, but it's something more stable and more reliable than what beIN Sports Connect is today. But I'm not so sure what other things they could have done to actually still be to be in a better position than they are now. A lot of it is down to the way that the industry is structured. the way there's monopolies kind of really kind of basically forcing their hand and putting beIN Sports into a very difficult position. But yeah. All right. Let me move on. Last comment from one of the listeners. This is from Jeff. This is, I listened to the podcast. Why didn't you ask the guy from beIN Sports when they were going to finally fix their streaming service? It's utter garbage and makes them look amateurish. It is one more example of how badly they're viewed by both carriers and customers alike. Them wanting those who have lost the service, Comcast and AT&T subscribers, to complain to these providers on their behalf is the height of chutzpah. You should have discussed all of this with him, an opportunity seriously lost. And that's a good point. I should have asked a question. I forgot to ask that specific question about beIN Sports Connect. I can probably guess what they would have said about it, but yeah, it's definitely a good point there from Jeff, and goes to what we've been saying about beIN Sports Connect beIN really kind of the Achilles heel for beIN Sports. But no updates, by the way, listeners, in terms of DirecTV or Comcast or DirecTV Now or AT&T UVerse. It looks extremely unlikely that any deal between Comcast and beIN Sports is going to happen at any time in the future. So if you're a Comcast subscriber holding out hope that a deal will be done with beIN Sports, it's very unlikely. So I would recommend you look at other options, other cable providers. DirecTV, I mean, that's something that DirecTV positions themselves as the leading satellite provider, the satellite provider that has the most amount of soccer channels and soccer coverage. So a deal could happen in the future, perhaps, with DirecTV, but I haven't heard anything yet.
Yeah, and so there have been people who have been asking me the last few weeks about this, and beIN has done a good job of ratcheting up awareness, at least in South Florida. I've seen billboards even in Miami to this extent. Fubo and Sling are where you have to go. I mean, go to worldsoccertalk.com. You can look at all of the legal streaming options to get you beIN and price shop and compare and see what's best for you. But that's really where you're at. I mean, I do think that, and I understand beIN ratcheting up pressure on Comcast and UVerse and DirecTV and UVerse, same thing, AT&T owned. But in the meantime, and if you want to participate in that, that's fine. But in the meantime, I would make the contingency of getting something else where you'll get beIN Sport.
Okay, next up, Kartik, we have an interview with Stuart Holden from Turner Sports / TNT / BR Football / Fox Sports. So we dive into discussing his role for working for Fox Sports and Turner Sports and what's that like, as well as diving into the Champions League coverage that we can expect to see on television sets around the country starting the week of September 18th. So let's go ahead and go into that interview with Stu Holden. All right, Stu, well, let's dive right in. So the first question I have is, when did you sign the deal with Turner Sports, and what was the reaction from Fox, who ultimately gave you permission to, I guess, moonlight for TNT while continuing to be employed by Fox?
Yeah, so, you know, the Turner interest, you know, it just kind of came, it came before the summer, but obviously I'm under contract with Fox, and with us losing the Champions League, it wasn't something, honestly, that progressed until after the World Cup, and we sat down with Fox and made it very clear that, you know, this was something that I was excited about, that potential opportunity, you know, and then also continuing my work with Fox. And I'm really happy that we were able to work it out to where, as you called it, the moonlighting. But you know, just in terms of, I think for my personal growth as a broadcaster and what I'm able to do, this is a role that's a little bit different, where I'm hosting and analyzing. And I think, you know, Fox realized that for me was something that can continue to take me to a higher level. And, you know, having done the World Cup and done that as an analyst and, you know, been part of the biggest event in the world and, you know, called the World Cup final, it was all, you know, it was all happening at a very good time for me personally, and something that I felt went really well. And now something that, you know, I've been really energized by, you know, being a part of Turner's Champions League coverage with BR Football.
So speaking of broadcasting, you've now been a co-commentator, you've been an analyst, and now a host slash analyst with BR Football. Is it one of those roles that you enjoy more than others? I'm sure you probably enjoy them all, but is it one that you kind of thrive on?
It's a really good question, because I think sometimes it's easy to forget the differences between all of them. And the preparation required for each role is very different. And, you know, as an analyst, a game analyst, you have to go a lot deeper on different players and teams and know the team's histories and the tactical nuances and all the storylines, and then also how that happens on the field. It's something I really enjoy because, I've always been a fan of the game as a kid. I've watched soccer. I've been an encyclopedia of soccer players since I was, 8 years old playing Championship Manager with my dad. And, so I really love that ability for 90 minutes to essentially take the viewer on a journey through a game and setting up a storyline and analyzing key areas and showcasing what I think is, my knowledge of the game. And that's something I've really, really enjoyed, especially being part of the big events and doing U.S. Men's National Team. And then, I've always loved the studio work too, because candidly, we're all athletes, I think, are all vain in some extent and love the on camera aspect. And I really found that was something too after retiring that still churned some of that nervous energy, the butterflies, the adrenaline, and having a minute to really convey your thoughts in an articulate way and having the energy to be able to show that you're passionate and enthusiastic about it in a way that's also entertaining to the viewer. So I've enjoyed my studio work at Fox, but then also this new role for me has been something that I've really enjoyed, because I have the ability now as a host to steer conversations and take them perhaps a layer deeper with being an analyst and thought-provoking questions, and then also allowing my personality to shine on camera. Cause I think when you're calling games, there's less of space to interject your personality in a way that, I'm a very lighthearted, fun, joking guy. And, that's how I was on teams. I was always kind of the prankster. And I think that, this new format now allows me to find a balance of really being analytical and invoking good conversation around the game, as well as having fun and laughing. And, that's what it feels really nice vibe on the set. And I hope that conveys to the viewers, and that it's mixed in with the serious stuff, as well as showing that we're having a good time and covering one of the greatest events in the world.
Now, who would be your biggest influence in that transition from former professional footballer going into the actual studio and being a studio talent, as well as a co-commentator? Is there one person that's helped you along the way that's kind of had the biggest impact?
There's been a few people that have helped me along the way. I would say the biggest influence has been Shaw Brown. You're familiar with his work. He was a producer, has been in the game for a long time with ESPN, with NBC. And he was actually the one who, when I tore my ACL in the Gold Cup final in 2013, sent me a text when I was still in the locker room, said, "So are you interested in TV?" And I wrote back and said, "You couldn't have waited at least a day or two." since that point, I was rehabbing in LA. He flew out to meet with me and talk with me. He got me involved with NBC, calling a game on a Thursday night, San Jose against Chicago. John Strong was my play-by-play. I sat down with John Strong for lunch before doing that. And, he said to me, and I'll never forget, he said, if you want to do this as a career, you need to take it as seriously as the rest of us do. And you need to work hard, and you need to understand that this is full time. This is, you have to do the work, you have to study, you have to prepare, you have to, do everything you can to learn and try and be better at this. And it was pretty full circle, the fact that I was calling the World Cup final with him just a couple months ago. And, I did my first game with him, and, guys like Rob Stone and Alexi Lalas and, Jonty Whitehead is a former executive at Fox, and David Neal, all these guys have been really instrumental in just kind of you know, bringing me along and giving me feedback when I need to. And it's something I've really taken seriously, and much like a player, of always trying to do little things and work on myself and watch games back. And, you know, Shaw has been the leader of that. And, you know, I laugh with him. I dread his review calls after we do games, because he nitpicks me for saying little words that he would say differently. And, you know, it is a craft. And I know you realize that, you know, being a broadcaster is not as simple as thinking I'm a former athlete and I know the game well, and I'm just going to get on TV and I'm just going to talk about it and I'm going to be great. There's a lot of fine tuning that goes with that.
Absolutely. So far, we've been really impressed by the energy and the chemistry on set for the TNT BR football coverage of the qualification matches from the Champions League. But out of all the studio talent that we've seen thus far, and there's been a lot, there's been Owen Hargreaves, Charlie Davis, Tim Howard, Carlos Bocanegra. We'll see this coming week, Oguchi Onuwehu, Kate Abdo, and Steve Nash, of course, and yourself. Is there one person you think that could be a standout star in the future and has a long, successful career ahead of him or her?
Man, you're putting me on the spot now. I think Steve Nash coming into this was a good friend of mine. I think he has a major challenge, or felt a major challenge himself, I'm a basketball Hall of Famer. How do I convey, because this, when Steve and I are together, all we talk about is soccer, you know, and I think that was kind of the attraction of putting us together, was that, you know, bar talk, soccer talk, you know, just two guys hanging out, really talking about the game in a good way. And I've been impressed by Steve because, he hasn't done much TV in the past, and the way he's adapted to this. And then also, I don't think he's displayed any type of insecurity. Then I don't think he has an insecurity over his knowledge of the game. And perhaps viewers at first would think, why is a basketball guy covering soccer? And the reality is he's as much of as a soccer aficionado as many people, and more so than many players that I played with, in terms of how he pays attention to the game. And I think that, mm-hmm. you know, that comes across. And you know, I think Tim Howard has done working with NBC in the past, but the way that, you know, he just looks so and feels so comfortable on the set in this type of role. And, you know, I think what really helps, honestly, in all of this is that guys that might be new to this or have done less TV, they're coming into a setting which you know, allows them to feel comfortable and really, you know, be themselves within that environment. And I think that's something that Turner and BR Football have been preaching from the beginning, is let's not be too rigid. Let's let guys showcase themselves. Let's not overproduce. Let's let these conversations flow naturally. And I think that that's allowed for some really great discussions on set in a way that, you know, people can sit there and enjoy.
Yeah, we've definitely seen some banter. We've seen a lot of fun on the set. We've seen soccer balls on the set. It's been good so far. One of the questions I have, Stu, is how open has Turner Sports been to whether it's you or Kate Abdo suggesting ideas for segment topics or for fun things to do on the set? How open are they to newer fresh ideas?
Yeah, very open. And that's what's been fun for me. And you were asking earlier about my different roles and, you know, what have I enjoyed? I think, you know, in an ability to also say to, you know, for Kate and I to talk, or to talk with Travis or Peter, our, you know, the producer and executive producer of the show, and just say, hey, we think that this might play well. And because we're kind of steering traffic, we can surprise guys with stuff, or, you know, we can talk to the producer ahead of time and come up with some ideas and some segments that might be fun. And I'm not saying that we're going to hit the mark on every single one of them, but there's a willingness and an openness to try something new in this space. And, you know, I don't think everybody's going to, it's not going to be something that everybody loves, but we hope to get to that point. And as far as pitching ideas, I have a call actually in a couple hours right now with our producer, where we're going to start to run over the show for next week. And, you know, if ideas come up, they get floated around and talked about, and if we can pull it off, then, it'll come alive. So that's kind of exciting for me. And if there's discussions or things or storylines that I feel really passionate about, we now have an ability to cover those.
Now, this season in the Champions League, it's different. We've got double headers. How much of a challenge does that present to you as a host slash analyst in terms of, you mean, you're going to have more on-air time, you're going to have more time to, you mean, provide pre-match analysis, you mean, kind of the break in between the two games and then post-match? It's a long day, and it's a lot longer than perhaps what we've been accustomed to with Fox Sports in the past. What sorts of challenges does that represent?
Well, look, anyone that's an on-air talent that says you're on camera too much is completely lying. That's why we're doing this. We want to be on camera. We want to be there talking about the game. So, you know, the extended pregame and postgame and double match window, albeit it makes for a longer day, that's why we're doing this. And I actually love that there's an ability to showcase two feature matches for the day. And when I look at the Champions League lineup that we have already, you know, as far as PSG and Liverpool and on the first day, and then you get Real Madrid, Roma the next day. And it's going to be challenging at times, but there's going to be so much content and storylines and things that we can do with BR Football and I think we have some really interesting analysts that can, you know, can talk about that type of stuff and to get deeper into some of these conversations. And so from that respect, I'm looking forward to that challenge. And it is a challenge because, like you said, you're filling more time. But, you know, I think when you look at, because of the Champions League, we could probably talk for about 6 hours straight, right, just about that without the game. Not that anybody would watch that, but we have that ability.
Absolutely. And last question, Stu, is it's an interesting dynamic because you have the two studios. You have the one in Los Angeles and the one in Atlanta. So far, how has that been as far as the chemistry kind of, and just the transitioning from one studio to the next? For the viewer, it seems seamless, but was that something you had to work on kind of in production to make sure that flows kind of seamlessly?
Yeah, so it's new, I think, for you know, many of us to have that type of you know, as far as we're in every conversation together. And you know, the first couple of shows, so we did a rehearsal day the day before, two rehearsal days rather, to kind of work on that. And then it's been an evolving process. I think something that was perhaps a little challenging the first two shows because we were finding times when people were talking over each other, which is going to happen regardless. But there has been a better understanding from everyone as you get more familiar of it, of how it works, and that, you know, Carlos could bring me into a conversation and I could jump into a conversation if I have something that I want to say, and that, you know, you're engaging more guests. And then I think with having a studio in Los Angeles over time, we'll be able to get some, you know, different guests into our studio, to talk about the Champions League and to talk about soccer and, you know, continuing adding different dynamics within that. So it has been a little different in that, you know, when you're developing chemistry, when people are in different studios, sometimes that's challenging. I think if you also look at the people that we've had, and Timmy Howard's a good friend of mine, so is Carlos Bocanegra, Charlie Davies, Owen Hargreaves, I thought did really well when he came in with us and just kind of picked that up on the fly. And, you know, it's something that I think can be unique, and again, is speaking to what Turner and BR Football is trying to do, which is a little bit different from the way studio shows have been done in the past.
Yeah, definitely. And you have that integration between social media and BR Football and the actual television, I mean, the actual show, the pre-match and post-match. And then on top of that, you've got the set that's very kind of, and the clothing, it's very loose, it's very laid back, it's very different. And it is, for the viewer, it's very appealing, kind of pulls you in, and so far so good. So best of luck with the Champions League coverage this season, Stu, and we're looking forward to it.
Okay, cheers, Christopher, I appreciate it.
So everyone, thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audio Boom, and worldsoccertalk.com. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review on iTunes. We greatly appreciate it. And Kartik, now that the international break is over and we're heading back into a busy weekend of club football from around the world, which will lead into UEFA Champions League football, what should they do?
Enjoy your football.